This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's my pleasure to welcome you here to the Friday edition of the Clark Howard Show. Now, our mission is the same, though, every day of the week. It's to serve you with advice and information that empowers you so you make better financial decisions in your life. Also, I talked about my worries about the economy yesterday, but today I have a really positive economic story I'm going to share with you later in this podcast. But first, it's Clark Stinks Day, where you share with me your feedback, where you feel like I have messed up and how I could do a better job serving you and your fellow listener or viewer.
I should have never encouraged you to speak.
You must think I'm pretty stupid.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're right, pal.
You always dance to this.
That last week.
Do you dance all the time to everything?
I love to dance, you know. You know me.
I've never met a minute I wanted to dance.
All right, here's the first Clark Stinks. Why is all the staff in your Consumer Action Center volunteers? As far as I know, you are not a 501c nonprofit, and I'm sure you would be the first one to tell us that we shouldn't do any work off the clock at our employers. I'm guessing you put them through extensive training, or they would have to have a finance background, and if you're letting them speak on behalf of your brand. I hope at the very least you take them on your annual staff trips around the world. I love the show, love your advice, but scratching my head a bit on this one, Karen.
Karen, thank you. Okay, so let me tell you where the Consumer Action Center came from, Team Clark. Early in my career, it was very frustrating to me. I started in media in 1987, and pretty quickly I realized I was talking to so many people, but so few were able to ask me a question. And that's how I came up with the idea of having what we called an off-air center, because then it was traditional broadcast media, where we brought together volunteers, trained them, and we have three paid staff members and the rest are volunteers. And yes, they do have a variety of backgrounds that are very helpful in giving expert advice in various areas. And people want to help. And so they volunteer. The Consumer Action Center costs money to run, and we absorb it as an expense like any other expense. So the whole idea of it is to be of service to others, and the people who volunteer are doing it to be of service to others. No, we don't take the volunteers on our staff trips because we need entire airplanes. Yeah. If we did so, we do a variety of events over the course of the year to show appreciation to our volunteers. We do it for a very simple reason. It was done simply to be a service to people, and the volunteers love being a part of that service.
My husband and I listen almost every day. We travel quite a bit, and I was surprised at the statement you made in response to a question about cruising. You stated that you left your wife at a museum and you went poking around. You were not in favor of the tours from the cruise line. Why would a husband leave his wife alone in a strange country to browse in a museum and you go wander around? Shouldn't you be with her as safety? She would probably appreciate you staying with her. We're travelers, and what we'd like to do is take a tour, and that way you can learn about the history of the area and the points of interest. Then we can wander around, but we always stay together. Why discourage someone from touring the country? Shame on you, Sally.
Okay, Sally, I'm sorry. You know, my wife and I live an overprivileged life. We spend about 6 weeks a year every year overseas. We're very experienced travelers, and I do romantically walk her to a museum. She calls me when she's done. I come back and get her, and then we proceed to wander around together. As for tours, I've traveled so much over the years, and I've seen so much that tours are not something that I've found to be necessary for me to do. We travel without an agenda, with no plan. We just wander where we do, and that's how we travel. And that's what works for us. Everybody's got to do with travel what feels best for them.
You don't stink on this one, or if you do, you have a lot of company. I frequently hear you saying things like, in all 50 states, or talking about how the U.S. has 50 state testing labs. There's a big asterisk for the 4 million of us who don't live in a state. Residents of the five island territories are U.S. citizens who fly the stars and stripes, pay taxes, can be drafted, and frequently serve our country in the military, as I did. We can't vote, that's a topic for another day, and we aren't eligible for a number of federal programs, including SSI and the ACA. When we hear things like in all 50 states or available to all Americans, we have to put that through an additional filter of even us, and frequently the answer is no. I just thought you'd benefit from hearing that perspective. Keep up the good work. You've got a lot of fans in the islands, Brian in Guam.
Brian, thank you. And I just talked about how I've traveled all over the place. I've never been to Guam. That's something someday I have to fix. And I apologize for the way I say that. The reason I say that, you pointed out the actual reason, is that the rules and procedures, benefits and laws are different in U.S. territories, Commonwealth, that kind of thing. I'm not talking about the states that are Commonwealths. I'm talking about Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. And because of those differences, I really talk about whether something is all 50 states or not. And I apologize if the way I say that makes you feel excluded, which truthfully, a lot of times people in U.S. territories do feel overlooked and underappreciated.
And thank you for your service. My cousin was stationed in Guam with the Air Force. It's a big one. Telling people to price shop prescription drugs is irresponsible and potentially deadly. Utilizing multiple pharmacies assures incomplete medication profiles that may result in harmful interactions being missed. I suspect your family would rather inherit fewer dollars but have you live a longer, healthier life. A better idea is to develop a strong relationship with a single pharmacy or pharmacist and ask them for help in managing your out-of-pocket costs. Jeff.
Jeff, thank you for that perspective. You know, the big chain pharmacies, the workers are so understaffed in their pharmacies and so overworked, I don't even think they have time to worry about drug interactions. Your idea of working with an independent non-chain pharmacy with the pharmacist there and having a relationship with them is obviously, as in medicine, anytime you have continuity of care, it is better for the patient, whether that's in a medical facility or at the pharmacy counter. Point well taken.
And I think most pharmacies have an interaction thing that will automatically pop up if they know all your medications. And isn't there like a medication registration where pharmacies see what medications you're getting from other pharmacies? I think there is something like that.
If there is, I am unaware.
Okay. Well, maybe someone will write in and
tell
us.
But the chain pharmacies, I'm telling you, they're too busy.
Right. But if something automatically were to pop up, you know, that would be a good thing. Okay. Clark doesn't stink, and neither do ETFs for automatic investing anymore. Thanks to one of Clark's favorite children, Fidelity updated their automatic investments tool recently. And now you can schedule recurring investments for stocks, ETFs, and mutual funds weekly, every 2 weeks, or monthly. I just happened across this in January, and I immediately converted my recurring investments from index funds to their ETF counterparts. If you invest weekly or every 2 weeks, you can choose the day of the week to invest, which makes it easier to line up with weekly and biweekly paydays. Thanks for all that you do. Love the show, Rob.
Rob, thank you so much. I was not aware that Fidelity offered this tool. Being able to do periodic investing in an ETF, stock, mutual fund, whatever, is really great because so often we'll have the best of intentions and then life gets in the way and we can't keep those habits in place or can't keep them regular, which is the goal of what you're doing. And I love that that is something you're making happen in your life.
You gave your verbal support to a listener that wanted to delete Credit Karma. Just sharing my personal experience with you, I recently made the decision to utilize their free credit monitoring service. I don't run balances and don't need any new credit cards, but recently I was notified by someone that my personal data was leaked in the 14.7 million person data breach. They offered to pay for credit monitoring for 2 years, but I chose not to respond to them. So far, I haven't detected any fraud against me, so I'm only using Credit Karma as a safety measure. It's free and their credit card promotions are easily ignored. By the way, your Clark Stinks segments are very worthwhile, but consider changing the corny track that precedes Clark Stinks. It grates on me, but I still never miss a show. Take care, Don.
Don, all right, let me answer in reverse with that. So something like that, that it becomes like a signal to people and it becomes like a memory track when they hear it. And that's why even when something grows old for some listeners or viewers, you keep it in place because it becomes like an appointment, like a signature. And I'm sorry that you find the track boring. I guess we've also had suggestions potentially to shorten it a little, but whatever you're feeling, understand that if you think about the audio signals, the audible signals you hear from different things, you immediately relate it to a person or an event taking place. Like those of us that are football fans, you know, there'll be certain jingles that maybe we're tired of, but it tells us that it's time for football, which is not sadly again till September. As to the Credit Karma thing, that's why I have Credit Karma, is for the reason you said. But an individual who's annoyed with Credit Karma, if they want to delete it, they can go ahead and delete it. But I love having the free credit monitoring as part of it. With my credit frozen, I would know there's really something wrong if an alert pops up on it.
We got a lot of Clark Stinks about your comments on the USPS saying that they're not federally funded. And people were just really mad. So I had so many to read, but I wanted to let you know that.
So the Postal Service was created. It's constitutional. It is an independent agency. It does receive federal support for certain activities, but it is designed to be a freestanding business. It is a complicated kind of thing. So I would call it, if you prefer, independent federal agency or a quasi-governmental agency. But it's birthed out of the federal government. It's birthed in the Constitution. And it is, if nothing else, it's federally influenced because Congress decides what kind of trucks they can buy to deliver the mail, as an example.
You recently gave advice on selling a home by owner that made you smell like four-day-old fish left on the dock. You said that you want to have a thick skin when showing the house, but you also advised to make sure you pay the 2-3% for the buyer's agent. This is contradictory. The buyer's agent will most likely show the house without you present, so you won't hear the comments about the bad color carpet or drapes. Also, you advise to get things fixed, hire an inspector, and make it appealing, but that costs money. I would list the house as described above with the buyer's commission, but I wouldn't fix a thing. You might get buyers willing to buy it as is. Then if that doesn't work, you can spend the money to make it more sellable, buddy.
Buddy, thank you. All right, so if you're doing a FSBO for sale by owner, not everybody's going to come to see it who has a buyer's agent. You're going to have people who want to come direct. And that's why you have to have the thick skin, because somebody may come in and they say, oh man, that is really ugly. Or why didn't they ever fix that over there or whatever? Or who would come up with a color for the bathroom like that? You know, you just, and they completely forget that you're not a merchant. You are the owner of the house. So that's why you have to have a thick skin. On fixing things, when a buyer is looking at a house, except in the strongest of strong markets, the buyer is buying a fantasy. They want it to be their dream they're moving into. And they don't want to see the reality of peeling paint or faded this or broken that. And so they aren't going to give you, except in the strongest markets, they're not going to give you as generous an offer, and your house may not sell as quickly as if the house has great curb appeal, looks happy, well-maintained, And a lot of those improvements you can do will cost a lot less than the additional dollars or the quicker sale will save you in getting the house moved at a faster pace.
I recently ran into you in person at Aldi, of all places. What are the odds? And you could not have been nicer, so I can't bring myself to tell you you stink. However, I've heard you talk about various fitness trackers, and I'm wondering why you don't ever mention Google Fit. It's not a separate device, but a free activity tracking app. It came pre-installed on my Android phone. I use it mainly to track my daily walking steps and weight, and I set up weekly goals. It can also detect heart rate and respiratory rate using my camera. I realize it doesn't have all the bells or whistles of a dedicated fitness tracker, but I like that I don't have another device I have to keep track of or keep charged or remember to take with me when I leave the house. As long as I bring my phone, my activity is being tracked. Best of all, it's free. I think it's perfect for someone who's just beginning a fitness routine to see if they can stick with it before investing in another device. Thanks for all you do, Bill.
And Bill, thank you. I was not aware of Google Fit. Did you know about it?
But I feel like it's not as accurate as something that's actually like I'm wearing that knows how many steps I'm taking. And yeah,
you're wearing two devices.
I do. I've got the Aura and my Samsung watch
and my Garmin fitness tracker.
Probably close to accurate. I mean, I think I'm being, you know, I do. I think it's good.
You and I are both obsessive with, yeah,
but you know, Bill said he's setting up goals and all that stuff. So that's great. I mean,
yeah, that's the key. And Bill, I don't know if you saw Aldi recently was selling their own branded fitness tracker. There was a wristband fitness tracker. Won't you guess how much it was, Krista? Because you think about how expensive these fitness trackers are.
Yeah.
And people who buy the really fancy Garmins pay $700 for them.
Yeah. I don't know. Was it like 50?
How about $4.99?
Wow. Definitely doesn't have built-in GPS.
I was almost tempted to buy it. Who knows? I was almost tempted to buy it. Just to see,
yeah, you should have.
If you could do that with a...
That'd be a great review to put on Clark.com. Darn it.
I'm sure they're all gone now. Maybe someone will let us know if it became instant e-waste or if the Aldi $4.99 fitness tracker actually does the job too. But Bill, your cost is free because you already have your phone and you're using the Google Fitness tracker without another device you have to charge. Speaking of which, my Aura ring is starting to die.
Uh-oh.
It's not holding a charge long enough. I haven't been to charge it all the time. So that's going to be an ugly expense if I have to replace this. Oh, well. Coming up ahead, do you know what makes an economy grow? What actually makes an economy grow? What is it that ultimately makes people wealthier over time? Well, we're in the midst of it right now in a time that so many people feel so gloomy. I'm going to tell you what the secret sauce actually is.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
A trend is something that you hope, when it's good, continues. And there's a trend going on right now in the U.S. economy that is beyond fantastic. And hopefully it will have legs. You know, we argue so much as a society, and this is true everywhere, about looking at life as one of shortage and who gets what. We only think about what are the slices of the pie, and human nature, we never think about what if the pie got bigger. Well, there is a no-cost free lunch that's truly free with the economy. And it's when we become more efficient as a society. This is in the dismal area of economics, But the stats are very clear that American industry, American businesses, both service businesses and manufacturing businesses, have had one good effect from the nightmare of COVID. And that is people had to adapt. Businesses had to adapt. You adapted or you might not have survived as a business. And people did that. They became more efficient. And out of that efficiency, we now produce the only way you create more wealth in a society. We create more goods and services per hour, per person worked than we did before by a good amount. And if that trend continues, that's what creates a wealthier society. And productivity is the magic. Productivity tied with technology. If you go back in the Wayback Machine to post-World War II, 1950, and you look at how the average American lived in 1950, almost 75 years ago, and you look at how we live now, so much is so much better than it was. And we as a society, we may have a terrible problem with income inequality, but the reality is all through, people are living much better, not because some tooth fairy put money under our pillow. We're living better because we now are able to create so much more with the same hours worked. And so this is big time stuff. We just went through almost a generation where productivity just kind of went nowhere. Why do you think people are frustrated? You take the fact that society was not generating more wealth overall, and that wealth was not being evenly distributed. You want to create unhappiness? Well, we did it right then and there. And we weren't alone in the world. And so out of all the badness of COVID, something really good may have emerged, and that is we are out of our rut and we're doing things much more efficiently in so many different businesses than we did before. It's all about learning how to do things simpler and better. An example I've given probably three times before now, I'm going to give again because it's so illustrative. Was there any reason we needed hundreds of different styles of toilet paper from the same brand, or dozens of different types of paper towels, or you name a product category where we were giving people more choice than the marketplace needed? And when push came to shove and manufacturers are like, okay, so we make all our real money from these top eight sellers and these 192 others, well, they don't really do much for us, but create a lot of hassle and inventory problems and all that. Simplicity pays. Why is it we heard about Aldi and Clark Stinks? Why is it that Aldi can sell groceries for 40% less, 40% less than a traditional supermarket? Because they have so few SKUs, they have so few units of different products they sell. Stock keeping units is what SKU stands for, if you wonder what the SKU means. And so they sell, instead of like the thing I was talking about the other day with spaghetti sauces, that you go in a traditional supermarket and there are a zillion of them, which I now know because I can only use low sodium. And then you go to Aldi, how many they have? They have two, three. And so they're able to be so much more efficient. That's one of the things manufacturers learned during COVID was, let's be more efficient. Let's not have to bring down assembly lines so we change out. We're making this instead of that and all that. So there is a fundamental change that will fall into old habits eventually. But also in service businesses, people had to adapt or die in service businesses during COVID. Those that could adapted, and they became more efficient. Now, in service businesses, do you consider this to be more efficient are more impersonal. Restaurants now, where you can place your order yourself at what people might think of as a fancy sit-down restaurant and pay your bill yourself right from the table. Now, of course, people bring you your food, and if you want, they'll collect your payment from you, but you can do the ordering and you can reorder drinks and you can pay and all that. Good thing or bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. I just ate at a place like that last night, in fact, but it was sort of, they do a good job at this restaurant. The person came up to me and said, if you need anything, stick this card up. I'm happy to come by your table. They have food runners, but then there was like a server going around, and you know, if you needed something, you could. But I did everything. I ordered on the app. I paid on the app. I was eating with a friend. We were able to each pay for our own food on the app and order our food. It was great.
And so that efficiency that also creates a certain, for many people, a depersonalization, is an example of what we've done that's made the U.S. economy more efficient. Well, it's not as personal, but more efficient. And that efficiency, that does create more wealth.
All right, we'll go to questions. Steve in Washington says, I just signed up for term life insurance for 20 years. I was accepted, but was surprised in something in the contract. It states that after the premium end date in 2044, we have the right to charge less than the maximum premium. And then it says, we will not exercise this right more than once each contract year. I think what they meant was more than the maximum premium.
Premiums will
cease after 40 years. Huh? What happened to a 20-year term? Do I have to contact them in 20 years and cancel to avoid getting more charges? I'm confused.
Okay, so let me explain to you what happened, Steve, in many level term insurance policies. So at the end of that time period, the insurer can just have the policy die, even though hopefully you're still living, right? Or they can convert it into what's known as annual renewable term at whatever the actuarial tables, or in your case, what the contract calls for, is the maximum they can charge after that time. So the premiums would go crazy high after the 20 years, because your actuarial risk in 44 is so much higher than your actuarial risk to the insurer in 24, i.e. you're much closer to potentially passing away 20 years hence than you are today. So the insurer may want to keep you on their book of business. And then suddenly in 2044, if you don't cancel, you're going to get a premium notice that's going to be mind-blowing how much more to keep that insurance in place after those 20 years. Now, let's deal with gloom and doom here for a second. Let's say 2044 comes along and you're in the throes of a terrible illness that means you can never qualify for insurance again, and your lifespan, sadly, may be relatively short. It is to your advantage in that situation, if they don't require medical underwriting at the end of those 20 years, leave that policy in place, pay the much higher premium so that the benefits, the amount of face amount of insurance, can then go to your loved ones, your designated beneficiary or beneficiaries at that time.
Gary in Florida says, how does compounding work in a 401k? If the current and future values of the account are based on the prices of the stock, bond, and mutual fund investment shares, which can go up and down, what constitutes the growth that would be compoundable? Compounding on an account that earns interest makes sense, but a 401k doesn't earn interest, right? If it's dividends, is that really something that can turn $200 per paycheck into $1 million over 30 years? Thanks.
Okay, so what a wonderful question, Gary. So when you look at compounding with a simple savings account or CD, it's clear. Every year it's going up so much and you can see the compound. Unfortunately, though, savings and CDs usually earn at or below what the inflation rate is in the economy. So your purchasing power doesn't ever grow. In stock type choices or stock bond portfolios, you're going to have up years, you're going to have down years. But over the trend line, when you look back, even through disastrous times, you're going to see that there's going to be more net good years than bad years. And so the compound, 1 year, the value of your account may go down, but then if you look at the trend line over the years, it's a steady movement upward, but it's like up and down, up and down, up and down but the trend is up. So you're compounding long-term value. And when people say, well, the compound long-term return of your portfolio should be around 7.7% or whatever number they say, that doesn't mean every year it's going to earn 7.7. Some years it'll be more. Some years it'll actually have a loss. Some years it'll be in between. It's the long-term performance that leads to the extreme long-term gains from years invested. And that's why even later in life, you still need to have some of your funds in stock type choices, because inflation is the enemy that will erode your living standard later in retirement. So you don't have overwhelmingly your money in stock type choices once you're no longer working, but it still needs to be part of the mix to outrun that inflation factor.
Wesley in Georgia says, we love the show. You're now the podcast of choice for my 9-year-old stepson, Ledger, on our way to and from school. Hi, Ledger.
Hi, Ledger. I hope that you are going to teach all your classmates the proper way to save and invest.
My question and comment is about pharmacy benefit managers, PBMs. You may have heard the lawsuit against Johnson & Johnson from one of its employees about how PBMs rip off everyone involved. Some of the ripoffs were so outrageous. An employee could pay cash and get a generic drug for MS for $77, even at one of the high-priced pharmacy chains. But if they had used their benefits, the total cost was over $10,000. There are PBMs that do things differently. And there's one I wonder if you have heard about, the Costco PBM. Yes, you heard it right. Your favorite wholesale club also is making a play in the broken PBM market with the same approach they always use, a transparent admin fee and no junk fees and hidden markups. There are others, and he mentions a couple, using a similar approach, but I'd love to hear your thoughts about the broken PBM market and whether these different kinds of PBMs can help fix it.
So I don't want to get too in the weeds with this, but PBMs obviously hurt the American economy and hurt the American people. PBMs are a corrupt influence in the medical business, because what these big organizations do, many actually owned by insurance companies, is they live off of kickbacks. The pharmaceutical manufacturers pay kickbacks that should be outlawed. It should be a crime, a federal crime, to have these methods of bribery. And that's what they are. They are bribes. And so the customer who's supposedly saving money, the patient, is being cheated by the PBM. People who work for large employers are usually channeled into one of these PBMs to fill meds. For most of the medicines you have that you take, you can fill them cheaper without the PBM than filling it with the PBM. I do this routinely with several of the meds I take, that I fill them free market, and I fill mine retail at Costco. And I did talk about the Costco pharmacy service, but I did not describe it as it technically is, as a form of PBM, because I didn't want them tarred as being part of the corrupt and dirty practice of pharmacy benefits managers. I'm not sure if there's any public benefit to employers using PBMs, but I can tell you they're clearly hurting the public, hurting you and me each and every day. What you've got to do is know that it is a corrupt system, and you've got to know the right way to shop for meds on your own and compare the price filling on your own versus filling through the PBM. They're a curse on the American economy and the cost that you and I have to pay for medicine. And it's one of those things that we know the problems with healthcare in the United States, but we're not focusing on how to fix them. And I hope at some point we get there. Anyway, remember, we're about positive energy here.
Yes, we are.
Positive change and you taking control in your own life. And know that some things are a little sordid and gray, and it's up to us to overcome them, either individually or as a society. And this is an example of that. So remember what we're devoted to, you having the knowledge so you can take more control in your own life and save more of the money you make, spend less of what you've got, and never let anybody rip you off, including any stinking PBM.